And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Well, usually this time of year, we are in Baltimore at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Fall Conference. This year, for a variety of reasons, we were unable to attend, but Matthew Bunsen is there. And Matthew is senior correspondent for our Sunday Visitor and a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. He's author or co-author of more than 50 books, including the first English language biography of Pope Francis, as well as the Encyclopedia of Catholic History, and also serves on the faculty at Catholic Distance University. You can visit osv.com and follow him on Twitter at Matt, M-A-T-T, Bunsen, B-U-N-S-O-N. Matthew, good to have you here again. Thank you.
Oh, that's a privilege to be with you, and a particular thanks for the privilege also of filling in for you last week. As I always say, I can substitute, but I cannot replace you.
Well, I'm so glad you're available and willing to do that. We haven't had a chance to talk about it, but turned out to be an excellent week with my mom and dad, and got a lot done. And it was one of those weeks where you're reminded of what families are really supposed to be like. So, Sally and I had
exactly. You know the job that God puts in front of you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen. Talk to me about what's the big story out of the USCCB assembly this year.
Yeah, well, I think there are a couple. The one is the approval by a huge majority. I think there are only four votes against it, of a document by the bishops on pornography. This is a pretty significant document because it really is one that will allow pastors to deal with what is a real plague. It's a scourge today in culture. And the document is called Create in Me a Clean Heart, Pastoral Response to Pornography. And it's certainly a much-needed tool.
And this was approved by a vote of 230-4, so obviously in one abstention. Creating Me a Clean Heart, a Pastoral Response to Pornography. Obviously, the bishops believe that this is a tool that pastors can use. They're aware of the extent of the problem. And in particular, was there any aspect of this document that they wanted to make sure was emphasized when they revealed it?
Yeah, part of it was that they recognized they need to give a means of helping people understand the dimensions of pornography and culture, not just those who produce it, but those who consume it.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things about the floor discussion was that they framed this also within the teachings of Pope Francis, the idea of rampant consumerism, of consumption at the expense of the dignity of the human person. Good. It even ties into things like throwaway culture.
Yep, good, very nice. Well, I'm looking for, I haven't seen it yet myself.
Well, and then of course there was the rather, at times contentious approval of the revised Faithful Citizenship document that was first released in 2007. It was subsequently approved by a pretty significant majority of the bishops, certainly enough to more than a two-thirds majority. But there was some back and forth from the floor as to whether or not they should have a new document in light of what some of the bishops see as a reprioritization of the social teachings of the Church. And that, I think, it created a few fireworks, and I know quite a few Catholic bloggers are still talking about today.
How were the lines assembled here? Those who wanted to revise the document versus those who wanted a new document?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Who felt in a way that the revised version of faithful citizenship is, in their view, inadequate, given the changes in American political landscape. But more to the point, what they see as Pope Francis's stress on poverty, on the environment, they were at some pains to argue that they don't want to demote things like abortion and same-sex marriage and euthanasia, but they felt that they wanted to have an expression of Francis's concern for those issues against them, and it turns out that the majority of bishops were of this view.
Yeah, the vote was 210-21, I guess.
Yeah, it gives you a pretty good idea of what we mean by consensus. Of the bishops who really felt this does the job well and that it certainly stands within, and this is the phrase that was used a number of times, the hermeneutic of continuity.
Yes.
Arguing that the teachings of the social doctrine of the church are still as relevant today as they were in 2007.
That's right.
And it really did come down to a discussion more of priorities rather than content.
Mm-hmm. Now, why couldn't the current document have been revised to take into account what these dissenting bishops had in mind?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of opinion. There was a particular exchange between Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, who, of course, is vice president of the conference, mm-hmm. and Bishop McElroy of San Diego.
He's new there, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He was just recently in Seoul, having been an auxiliary elsewhere in California,
right.
I think in San Francisco. Cardinal DiNardo was of the view that, in fact, the revisions did reflect much of the teaching of Pope Francis, and again, stress that it recognizes in this new document that there is perfect continuity between
yeah.
Benedict XVI and Pope Francis.
Yes,
and
good.
In fact, I've been writing about this for our Sunday Visitor, that we have to be careful to avoid the trap of feeling that we have to choose between Benedict and Francis, that there is some sort of a discontinuity between the two of them.
Well, we should acknowledge, though, there are people today who are writing out there who are trying to do that. They're trying to force a break between Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, and Pope Francis. And it's very frustrating to hear them make that case. Why are they doing that?
I think in part because, I think they come in different groups, that there's certainly the media aspect of that that sees Francis and in Francis what they want for the church, and that is a total break from the past, that hermeneutic of discontinuity, of rupture, that it was applied over the decades to the Second Vatican Council. They want Francis to be something that he really isn't. And Francis, of course, if we read him very carefully, even including the encyclical Laudato Si, we do see that he stands in great continuity with the teachings of the church. But there are those who want to, as I said, project onto him their own desires for change in the church.
Mm-hmm.
There are others, I think, who are trying to interpret what Pope Francis is talking about in a way that is faithful, at least to how they see him establishing those priorities again, certainly in Catholic social thought, of the stress on poverty, on the stress of integral ecology. It's going to come down, though, to a real argument as to what we mean, what Francis means by integral ecology. And again, if we read Laudato Si, the takeaway should be that, as he writes in the encyclical, we are not God.
Right.
And he makes that other point that you cannot, on the one hand, be pro-environment and not be pro-life.
Right. Yeah. I'm surprised that some wanted to pick a fight on this issue. I would think they would want to preserve the older document for reasons of continuity. And also to show that they're not driven by political considerations every 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's easy to overstate some of the disagreements. With any gathering of bishops, you're going to have a lot of very strong personalities. Certainly, the history of the church has proven that.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I wrote for OSV, it'll be coming up in a piece. In my experience, and certainly the experience of church history, always shows that if you lock 200-some bishops in a room and ask them to discuss important topics, you're going to have very strong personalities. You may have tempers that flare. But in the end, they're going to have a consensus. And it's always amazing how all of those bishops seem to come together and speak in the end with the mind of the church. And I think that's certainly what we've seen here with the votes over the last couple of days.
Mm, very good. So were you surprised that the vote was so lopsided on the revision of faithful citizenship?
No, I think there was a general view going in that this is a document that they were comfortable with the revisions. All of them had a chance to read them. I think there was some good discussion. I would point out especially the intervention of Cardinal Donald Worrell of Washington, D.C., who used that classic phrase that we must not make perfect, the pursuit of perfect is the enemy of the good.
Yeah. That is a phrase I actually like very much.
Yeah. And I think his intervention came at exactly the right time. And he urged the bishops to remember that they need to be united and to present a teaching document to the faithful in what I think everyone is in agreement is going to be a pretty contentious and very difficult 2016 election cycle, mm-hmm. with a lot of very complex moral and social issues.
You know, somebody today used a phrase that I had never heard before, and I'm wondering if you've come across it. The phrase is, quote, Tea Party bishops. Have you heard that phrase before?
I have. It's one of those phrases, I think, that tries to isolate and destroy. It strikes me as something of an Alinskyite kind of phrase.
Yeah.
That in common culture today, especially in the media environment that we're in today, especially the secular media, Tea Party has somehow assumed a horrendous pejorative meaning to it. So you're demonizing somebody and also trying to strip away their legitimacy to speak.
Yeah.
And I think it's an unfortunate one.
Yeah, it gives the impression that they're beholden to a political ideology. I was surprised to hear it being used, and thankfully the person who used the phrase was mocking the phrase, but I didn't even know it was in circulation, because one thing I've noticed with bishops that I've met over the years and had a chance to talk to is that they really try to avoid giving the impression of being politicized at all. They do have issues. They have clarity, but they want to make sure that the church is perceived as transcending partisan politics, and they don't want their office to be co-opted by political parties or partisan concerns. So I was surprised to hear somebody actually use that phrase.
Yeah, I would agree. And if we look back, especially in the history of the modern papacy, we can see just how non-political the popes have been.
Yep.
How important it is for all facets of Catholic teaching to be presented in a purely non-political way.
Yeah. Matthew, thank you so much. People should see our Sunday Visitor to get these articles, right?
Yeah, much appreciated. It's a privilege to be with you, Al.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Matthew Bunsen, again, he's writing for our Sunday Visitor on the Bishops' Conference.